Good evening. Our first order of business tonight is a public hearing on the local law, number D. That will be a letter D, but okay. Local law overriding the tax levy limit for fiscal year 2020. Is there anybody who would like to address the legislature on that item? All right, I'm going to close the public hearing and open the Tompkins County Legislature meeting for June 4th, 2019. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Roll call of members.
Dan Klein.
Here.
Ann Corman.
Present.
Mike Lane.
Here.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne.
Present.
Dave McKenna.
Here.
Glenn Morey.
Here.
Mike Sigler.
Here.
Shauna Black.
Here.
Amanda Champion.
Here.
Deborah Dawson.
Here.
Henry Granison.
Yeah.
Rich John.
Here.
Anna Kellis.
Here.
Martha Robertson.
Here.
14 members present.
Thank you. I would like to ask for, yes, an executive session. At the end of the evening for to discuss labor negotiations. It doesn't have to be long. But. All right. We have just the one. I'd like to entertain our public here for public privilege of the floor. By signing this, you agree to a three-minute time limit. In addition, I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. I agree that if I cause a disruption and am asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. If anybody else would like to speak, just the forms are in the back of the room there. Faye Gugakis. Hi, Faye.
Oh, hi. Hi, everybody. I'm me again here. I'm sorry, I'm going to speak about Lyme bikes again. I've had a very difficult day, so I'm not prepared really with notes to talk, so I'm talking off the cuff. Tomorrow in the city, unless they changed it, they're going to be voting on Lyme scooters to come as a test pilot. I'm going to be saying that, going there and voicing my concern about them not having the pilot, because the Lyme bikes, both the regular Lyme bikes and the electric bikes, have not been made accountable for how people use them. I passed Wegmans today. I mean, I went into Wegmans, but I Wegmans and Barnes & Noble's, which has a smaller bike rack. So if you look at these railings, so you have these slits, and the bicycle goes in there, right? Well, the regular bicycles are not a Lyme bike. So there was a Lyme bike that was parallel to the bike rack. So you're taking up four spots. You have to move that bike. Where do you move it to? This is the problem we're having with these bicycles. You don't have an infrastructure for them. And the mayor brought these here without a public hearing, which is egregious enough. They don't. My council president, Seth, said to me, I don't know, said to me, well, we had the public hearing at the planning development because you requested it. No, it shouldn't be I requested it. It's the right thing to do. The mayor said we'd have a public hearing after I mentioned it several times, and that really hasn't manifested. We're not talking about a public hearing like at a meeting. We're talking about a discussion with the community, a back and forth, if you will. You know, I would love to sit there and have you question me for a half hour. I don't have a problem. I could really help you. I could help the city because I bike downtown every day. I see these problems every day at the library book sale. There were four or five people riding line bikes. They took up the whole bike, all the bike racks. There is a problem. So, I mean, it's not about we don't want to put people on bikes and we don't want to solve global warming. Nobody's saying that. But you can't bring something in the community for whatever the reason is and disrupt the quality of life of other people. It's wrong. Okay, so in 4 minutes, what's my recommendation? We need a resolution from the county sending it to the city saying we have a problem here because the bikes are also in the county. So I'll come back next time and I'll hopefully have some others like fines and there's things we could do. But think about a resolution from the county.
Can I ask you a question? And
absolutely. You know I love it.
Okay. Well, it's a suggestion, maybe not exactly a question, but I agree with you when they are placed badly, and often they're fine. Often they're next to a bike rack, nowhere, not in front of the slots. But I do see them block, either taking up the slots. I've never seen them parallel, like you said, but I'm sure that it happens. If people start taking pictures of the incorrectly placed ones and sending them to, I don't know, city council, sending them to Way to Go, maybe that's the thing to do. Because I also agree they're heavy. They weigh a ton to try to move them. And it's really not like the non-customer's job.
Martha, that's so exactly when you had Duxton and Seth sitting there and not giving you suggestions, that is absolutely one of the biggest suggestions because I don't have a cell phone. And I've said that to them. We need to document. In fact, I was walking past, you know, Seth was coming this way. This was like a year or when they first came out. And then I'm walking this way and it was near the nursing home on Albany Street. And it was right in the middle of the street. And I said, Seth, can you take a picture of that so this way we could discuss it? No. I swear to God, I was horrified that, no, they don't want to deal with it. No, not deal with it. They want these things here. But I ride every day, and I promise you, all I see is downtown because I don't have an electric bike to go elsewhere. But I see the problems. I saw the problems today. Two bikes parallel. You know, but yeah, I agree with you. Okay. There needs to be an investment. And they know where these bikes, they have tracking systems, which that's a whole nother issue. I don't like what these technologies are doing. But they know who's riding them, where they're left. I mean, okay, they don't want to do anything. That's why write a resolution and say the city is not being a good steward, and you're asking them to do so. And that's one suggestion.
Okay.
It's a good suggestion.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Faye. Appreciate it. Is there anybody else from the public who'd like to speak?
I love talking to you.
Well, thank you, Faye. We'd like to have you here as well.
Is that George with a haircut?
Mm-hmm. Is that George? What is that, the summer do? Come on up, George. Hi, welcome. George McGonigal from City Council.
Smooth, George.
All right.
Sorry, I'm late.
Your foot's better?
It's getting better, yep.
Okay.
You might want to avoid the West End like the plague for the rest of the week. They're working on the bridge. And traffic was backed up all the way, almost the city line on Hector Street this afternoon. We have our meeting tomorrow night, Common Council, and there's a lot on the agenda. Let me find it. The I IURA's consolidated plan. Nels Bond has put that together, and we're going to vote on that tomorrow. That's primarily affordable housing and some business startup funding. I'm really excited about all that. The mayor's plan for sustainability will be on the agenda. We'll vote on that. The e-scooter pilot program, we're going to vote on that. It's a trial basis, basically. And we're going to vote on a resolution supporting New York State Emergency Tenant Protection Act of 1974. My first ward councilmate, Cynthia Brock, is bringing that forward. I'm sorry, I didn't have time to prepare better. This Cervantes sustainability thing is called Ithaca Green New Deal. And we're having a resolution put forward by Alderperson Murtaugh for a resolution supporting reproductive rights. Our police chief just retired, so we'll be appointing an interim police chief. That's all I can think of.
Thank you. Thank you, George. Questions? Amanda.
So for those of us who live on West Hill...
like me and you.
And had to drive all the way to Buttermilk Falls to get here tonight, so I didn't go down there. You said a week? How long is this going to last?
Till Friday. Through Friday.
Okay.
And that's a good call. That's the way I went this morning.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Buffalo Street's not as bad as East or West State Street.
Well, when it's my turn, I'll talk about Route 13. Deborah, Rich, and Mike Sigler.
So, George, I really like the new look, by the way. Quite handsome. I confess that I'm not as familiar with the details of Cervantes Green New Deal as I should be. Is there anything in there that relates to the use of electricity, heat pumps, geothermal, as opposed to gas for residential heating and commercial space heating?
Yeah, I think that's going to be all part of it. The particulars, he hasn't spelled them all out yet, but that's definitely part of it.
So that would be a zoning requirement then? Or how would the city enforce that?
That's a good question. I don't have the answer to that.
Thank you.
But I'll find out.
So what are you voting on tomorrow night?
Whether to accept...
the goals.
The goals. Whether to take on that... that task.
Okay.
Which,
but the plan isn't there, just sort of a goal statement?
Look, some of the plan is there, but primarily it's to become neutral, energy use neutral by 2030.
Okay. Let's see. Rich and then Mike Sigler.
I just wanted to say we had a water main break yesterday afternoon on our street, and the city crew got there right away, worked straight through, worked overtime, and got it fixed. I was really impressed with the speed and the effort. So
I appreciate that, and I'll pass that along. We have real good water crews, and we just added an additional crew, and we have really lousy water infrastructure, and so there's water main breaks all over the place. There was a major one under the West State Street Bridge that's being repaved today, last winter, right after they paved it. And So, yeah, it's a big problem, but they're good.
Yeah. I understand there's a tank on South Hill that's getting refurbished so that you're pushing water up there and it's stressing other parts of the system, perhaps?
I don't know the answer to that.
Anyway, they did a good job, I'm going to say.
My sailor and then Henry.
Yeah, I was just wondering, as part of the Green New Deal, if the city would be imposing its own natural gas moratorium, much like Lansing is, but do a self-imposed one as opposed to one imposed by NYSEG.
I don't know the answer to that either.
Thanks.
It's an excellent idea, though, Mike.
It's the first time we've heard it.
Henry.
And George, how is the city going to analyze the e-scooters? Basically, since the pilot program, how are they going to basically analyze the pilot?
Well, I think there's like a number of X number of broken legs and concussions. And I think, well, we don't know if it's going to pass yet.
Yes, we don't know that.
But I think all the usual suspects will be involved in the decisions, the city staff, the police, Public Works, the commissions, the Mobility Commission, and the public. If it passes tomorrow, it's a pilot program probably through fall.
Through November.
Yeah.
November. They said November.
Okay. That's the fall. That's in the fall, right?
All right, so the question is how you decide whether, I mean, a pilot means you're going to evaluate it and then decide, does this look good or not good?
Right.
Okay. So you don't, I'm sorry, did I miss it? Do you know how it's going to be evaluated?
I do not.
Okay.
I think city staff and the public will be all involved.
Anybody else? All right, a couple things. I want to say yay to Stewart Avenue.
I was going
to
mention that.
Yeah. That's great. The block between Seneca and State was covered over completely. The block between Buffalo and Seneca is partly covered, so with asphalt, and it really, those were, I think, the worst sections, and we appreciate that, really. I know Shauna wondered now how are women going to go into delivery if they're in the latest stages of labor. But
there's plenty of other streets in the city.
It's true. No shortage, right. So on the Lime bikes, it is a question of where can people send photographs, let's say, if you see bikes parked in front of bike racks or in other inappropriate places. Where should people send photographs if they walk around and they see bikes in the way?
I would Board of Public Works. That's where I'd send them.
Okay. Is there like a particular one person that gets it there?
You could send them to Tim Loeb, the city head city engineer.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's helpful. And then speaking of Tim, I was talking to him today at Stewart Park. There was a great event, sort of kicking ribbon cutting with newly refurbished main pavilion called the Picnic Pavilion for the at Stewart Park, a partnership with the city and the county and the Friends of Stewart Park and lots of volunteers. And Tim was there, and we talked about Route 13, the traffic. So you were saying that the West Hill, I guess the east-west traffic coming from West Hill, was a problem. Well, the north-south traffic on Route 13, like by Purity, it was at 10 in the morning, which I didn't think was rush hour, was like
45 minutes.
Bumper to bumper. It was just
Yeah,
like
I don't
stopped.
Know. All over town today, it's been horrible.
So he actually said, Tim said, well, they have spent some amount of significant amount of time work trying to get DOT to pay attention, New York State DOT, finally have an offer that DOT will put cameras, I guess, on the lights so they can monitor the traffic in real time, monitor it from Syracuse, because they're not going to schlep down here, you know. So which is also much more efficient, so they can see it at a lot of different times a day. But it sounds like it's going to take months before those cameras get put in. So I said, okay, maybe we have to bump this up a little bit. So I was going to suggest that Svante and I write a joint letter and say what a really destructive problem it is, especially because he said his view is that it's really just the timing of the lights. It's not like some lack of, there's no lane closure, there's no lane, you know, it's two lanes all the way through with turning lanes. It doesn't make any sense, but that he thinks it's just the timing of the lights. So I will follow that up. I just wanted to let you know in case you are talking to Svante about it. I think it's something that we should just start making more noise.
I appreciate that. One thing you should know is that the city has begun the process of actually trading streets with the state. The state controls Seneca Street and Green Street, and the city owns part of South Meadow Street, and also I think East State Street's involved. So we want to trade with the state, and one of the advantages will be we'll be able to synchronize more lights in the city, particularly the east-west lights. I'm told by Eric Hathaway, who's the city traffic engineer, that this process has to be approved by the state legislature, and it's going to take a long time, but a letter from you and Svante may, who knows, may speed it up.
We'll give it a shot. Okay. All right. Did I see Annie and then Mike Lane?
Thank you. I was just going to also add that I had a constituent call me today about that traffic, and she takes that road every day to pick up her kids and, you know, bring them back and forth to different activities and to work. And so she noticed how much slower it's gotten. She said she timed it recently, and from when it turned red to when it turned green was just over a full minute at a time when it was not rush hour. And so today, driving by there, I looked. It was around noon, hardly any traffic anywhere else, but backed up at those lights almost half a mile because
we're on
so
Meadow
on
Street.
Route 13 from I guess 3rd Street.
The north side.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, Mike Lane, then Mike Sigler.
Yeah, I got to experience Fulton Street today. With took me 20 minutes to get from Day Street to Route 79. I was heading for Watkins Glen, and that was a lane closure down by Alternatives Federal Credit Union. I don't know what they were doing there, but they were had actually closed the lane. But what I wanted to ask, is there any update on the inner city bus facility or where they're going to be located? Are they going to stay where they are on Green Street? Is there anything that they're looking at besides that?
As we know, this was not a problem created by the city. It's going to stay where it is for now. I don't think anybody's happy with it where it is. One of the bus companies is suing the city because we've asked them to move where they pick up people. They don't work with, like, physical tickets. It's all app stuff, you know. So they don't necessarily have to have one designated spot where people buy tickets. Nevertheless, they're suing the city. We're looking at more than one location, perhaps having different bus companies pick up and drop off at separate locations. But it's a complex problem, and we haven't solved it yet.
Thank you.
Mike Ziegler.
Hey, George, thanks for coming. Not to nitpick, but, I mean, I hear a lot of people complaining about the traffic, but, I mean, isn't this kind of what the city policy is going to be going forward? I mean, we want more people to bike in so that there's less traffic. We want more people to live in the city so that there's less traffic. And we want, I think Lime scooters will probably pass tomorrow, so, again, people won't be driving in and using their cars, so there'll be less traffic. So, I mean, I hear us complaining about it, but isn't that really kind of the policy of not just the city, even though of the county, I would think. So just putting that out there for you.
I don't see
you don't have
how,
to answer it. I just.
I mean, I'm not that smart, but I don't see how having a lot more people creates less traffic. I don't see how having apartments that cost $3,000 a month are going to be populated by people without cars.
I see your point, Jordan. I do.
Oh, can I ask about a road? Is Cottington Road a county road?
What? Is Cottington a county road?
Yeah.
Yes.
Can you fix that intersection with Burns Road?
Haven't we fixed that by now?
That's been under construction
very
for
funny.
A year.
Yeah.
It's been 10 years.
Consider it done.
You did the final paving last week.
Good.
What did you say, Dave?
So yes, we can.
Thank you very much.
What did you say, Dave?
The project they painted or did the final paving is this week, I think it was, actually.
Great. Okay, head out
yes.
there and check. And we appreciate the joint meeting we had. We're glad you came also on public safety.
Good.
Yeah,
yep.
So I'm sure we'll talk
Thank
about
you.
That some more later.
Yep.
All right. Thanks a million, George. Appreciate your time. All right. Legislators, privilege of the floor. Mike Lane.
Saturday's Dairy Day in Dryden. Mm-hmm. Come out and have some fun. It starts in the morning with a parade. I think it starts at 9:30. Nice day in Montgomery Park. The weather report sounds very promising. And we can have some more fun. We had some nice fun the other night at the Ithaca Festival Parade. We weren't disappointed because normally there is rain for that parade, but it cleared right off, and by the time we got to march, and of course we were the next to the last entrant in the parade, and we had to wait a while, we had a nice dry march, and I do want to send out a kudos to Marsha Lynch, who's been coordinating these events out of county administration, has been doing a great job on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Amanda.
Thanks. So I will not be at the next legislative meeting. Not because I don't love you all, but I'm going to Vancouver, British Columbia, to an environmental communication conference. And using some of our county funds to, it's a four-day conference, lots of interesting things. I thought I would just read you what the sort of topic actually means. In the simplest terms, environmental communication is communication about environmental affairs. This includes all of the diverse forms of interpersonal, group, public, organizational, and mediated communication that make up the social debate about environmental issues and problems and our relationship to the rest of nature. So that's sort of the broad outline. I've been looking through the program. It's going to be all sorts of interesting things. The general theme of the conference is water, and because it takes place in Vancouver, there's lots of water and there's lots of issues, Indigenous people issues. There's going to be discussions and seminars on communicating about in the midst of our Arctic meltdown, Green New Deal, media and advocacy and policy. So huge range of stuff related to the environment and water issues. And I'm also going to spend a couple extra days just being a tourist. So I'm very excited, and I will come back after that and tell you all how it was.
So one cross-eyed look, Amanda's expense, paying some of her own expenses and the expenses that the county is supporting are the same as the as an average NYSAC conference.
Yeah, it's actually less than NYSAC, what you all get to go to NYSAC. I'm doing my own airfare, so don't worry about that.
So it's quite fine. It seemed very appropriate. Annie?
Thank you. So June is LGBTQ Pride Month, and this year it also marks the 50th anniversary of the historic Stonewall riots that began June 28, 1969. And these riots were seen as the start of the gay rights movement. And when I started looking up a little bit about more about the history of it, they say that they were sparked by a police raid and rough treatment of gay patrons. And some of the books that I've read over the years talk about what actually happened, first-person stories, and the treatment was pretty darn rough. If people were often, gay bars were often raided, and everybody was arrested, and sometimes people were sexually assaulted at the police station. People were beat up at the bars and at the police stations, and often not able to make phone calls for 24 hours. So that was 50 years ago, and things have changed quite a lot. But that was in my lifetime, and things have gotten a lot better. But we still have a ways to go. There's a lot of pushback on our civil rights with the current federal administration, unfortunately. But on the bright side, I would just like to thank the county for raising pride flags again this year, and also give thanks to the town of Lansing, the town of Enfield, Caroline, the village of Trumansburg, and I think there's a few more, but those are the ones I know of that are also have proclamations recognizing Pride Month and or have pride flags flying. And that means a lot to the community, so I really appreciate that. And for Pride Month, there's several events going on right here in Ithaca. June 14th, Suzanne Westenhofer is a really funny comedian who's going to be at La Tourelle. The 22nd and 23rd are two activities that Finger Lakes Pulse, a local LGBTQ group, is putting on, and I'm on the board of that. So the 22nd, we have three comedians coming to the Hilton in one evening, and that's hosted by our group and Kenneth McLaurin, thank you. And the 23rd, we have a Pride picnic, and everyone is invited to attend that, and that's 12 to 4 at Cass Park. And I would also ask folks, if you're hearing something, you know, they call them microaggressions. If you hear maybe a joke or you hear somebody make a sarcastic remark that doesn't seem right to you, say something, because not saying something continues the aggressions on people and makes them feel uncomfortable. So please say something. And I just also want to thank Faye for wearing her vest and for coming and speaking up. But, yes, she's going to show her vest. So if you're a regular bicyclist, I have one to wear at home, but when I must admit, when I hop on occasionally a Lime bike, I don't have my vest here, but I really appreciate you wearing that and showing everybody that that's a good way to be safe. And one event coming up in Trumansburg is the third annual Porch Fest, and that's Saturday, June 15th from 12 to 4. And lastly, I just want to say it's kitten season, and I just last week started fostering four baby kittens, which is why I'm having a hard time even thinking right now, because sleep is not something on my schedule right now. So please, if you are, you know, other folks who are adopting cats or have cats or dogs or any other critters, please get them spayed and neutered. Thank you. Oh, and if you want a cute little kitten, there are pictures of them on my Facebook page.
Thank you, Annie. Anna Kellis?
A couple things. First, I wanted to just thank everyone who put on the Diversity Consortium from this last week. It was profoundly inspiring. There was a keynote speaker, Dr. Sean Eversley Bradwell from Ithaca College, very inspiring. I went to a presentation from Nia Makepeace, and her presentation about education with consciousness around race was incredibly inspiring. And there was one statement that was said over and over again that I haven't heard said as eloquently as this, but it makes so much sense, and I wanted to repeat it. It's something that I think a lot of people know very well and have heard for a long time, but I appreciated it and wanted to repeat it, which is the saying that you are not racist is very different than saying that you are anti-racist. And I very much appreciated the non-racist sentiment can be experienced as very defensive, protection of self. But the intention of standing up and being an advocate and standing up for an anti-racist and an inclusive environment. So I took that to heart, and that's something that I want to continue to promote and focus on. So I wanted to thank everyone who put that on. And I wanted to thank George and the city for the resolution that they brought forward on tenant protection. And I just wanted to let people know there are 9 bills currently at the state that would amend the Emergency Tenant Protection Act. And I just wanted to give people a little bit of a sense of what those bills would do, because from what I understand, there's enough support for it. And it is looking like there's a pretty positive chance of it passing. So it means repealing vacancy decontrol, making preferential rents permanent for the life of the tenancy, eliminating rent increases through major capital improvements and individual apartment improvements, and ending the 20% vacancy bonus that incentivizes harassment and leads to evictions. So those would all be amended and addressed as sort of removing those loopholes in the existing ETPA. And so I just wanted to give people a heads up that that's what's currently at the state that is being supported by many progressive elected officials around the state, including the City Common Council, who will be voting on it tomorrow night.
Thanks, Anna. Anybody else? Okay, I've got a couple of things. The day of the Diversity Consortium Roundtable, I went for about an hour and then went down to Binghamton for the regional council meeting, Southern Tier Regional Economic Development Council, which I try to get to whenever they have meetings. The new round of for applications for state money is open. The deadline for applications for CFAs, the consolidated funding application, is I think it's July 28th. It's the end of July. People should anybody interested in following up on those opportunities should. So the best one-stop place to go for help is Heather McDaniel at TCAD. I know some of our county staff are working on a couple of different proposals. Scott Doyle on some trail initiative. The housing staff is working. Megan and David are working on something with housing. I'm sure there are other things in the works. So it's high season for the regional council applications. I also went to a Chamber of Commerce meeting. There's the Government Affairs Committee, which I try to go to every month. And it was just this past Monday, and it was a sort of a roundtable discussion about a couple of topics. One was child care access and affordability, Airbnb. And then we didn't even get to outdoor recreation and prevailing wage proposals. But the time spent on child care was really... It was very interesting, and the Southern Tier Regional Council is actually, Regional Economic Development Council is actually working on a region-wide proposal to support family daycare providers, very much like what we have funded here with Jude Rose at the Child Development Council. So they're in touch with Sue Dale Hall. So child care is a definite focus this year coming from Albany, from the governor's office. So it was important to talk about it. So somebody turned to me and said, so, Martha, what kind of family-friendly policies does the county have for its 750 employees? Like... Do we have space for people to breastfeed if they need to? Or how are we on flexible schedules? Or if you have to bring your child to work? And I honestly, I couldn't exactly answer. My sense is that people make individual sort of accommodations. Department heads make individual adjustments as possible. But I don't know if we have any real thrust in that area, Jason. What's your sense of it?
Yes, I think there are individual, departments make adjustments as needed. There is some work flexibility, but to be more specific, I'd have to know, a little bit more, if there's a specific question. But usually it's a department specific based on the request. I know department heads try to work the best they can with employees to accommodate needs.
Okay. Was that, I don't think it was, any part of the climate survey?
Nothing specific around child care needs, no.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
Might be worth adding.
Okay. I wonder if that's something that we should think some more about. Leslie?
So certainly we can think some more about child care. It's something that should be at the forefront of our thinking. But several years ago, the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee brought forward the issue of flexible work schedules, and several departments, I believe we did pass something that allowed departments to individually, make those things happen. I know DSS had taken advantage of it. I'm trying to remember what all the other departments were. But we were taking into consideration at least that part of it to allow workers time when there are things that are happening around children in school or so on and so forth, or just in general. And that has been working well as far as I know. So I haven't heard any complaints about it. So we can look further into issues around more specifically child care.
And there's a whole range. Space time for support for breastfeeding and other things. So, all right.
Things are in place.
Okay, thank you. And then we also talked in terms of short-term rentals. So this is an IDA referral here, Rich. The question of what if some of these IDA apartment buildings end up getting used as short-term rentals. I don't think the IDA has actually looked at that as far as a policy that we don't really want to see those housing units turned into Airbnb hubs for Airbnb. So that's just, we'll put a little, put a note to selves about that one. And finally, On May 22nd, Irene Weiser and I went to Albany for a meeting with the Public Service Commission and with leaders at NYSEG, and Katie Borghella was on the phone for the meeting as well. I can fill anybody in on sort of results on the full conversation, but the big takeaway was, so this is about the gas moratorium in Lansing and the non-pipe alternative that we've been working with NYSEG on. The main takeaway was we've been sort of advocating that if we get a reduction in load, if we can get people off of gas, then we would like NYSEG to allocate that gas to commercial or industrial processes and that really need that kind of energy. We learned May 22nd that they can't just do that. By state law, they have to allocate energy first come, first serve. And in order to get that policy changed, we probably have to file a formal petition with the Public Service Commission. So since that is the goal of this whole thing, to be able to reduce loads so that the power can be shifted to where it's really needed for economic development, I think that is where the group, it's called Alliance for Non-Pipe Alternative, is probably going to put its energies next, is to develop the documents and the supportive information to ask the Public Service Commission to make that change. And we think that that might be a benefit for NYSEG more generally if they have that option, because I think they're facing similar issues around the state. So just wanted to let you know kind of that was a result of the meeting, and I think there will be more to come. So, and I understand Lansing representatives are going up on June 12th, so for a similar kind of meeting.
Not so, all of them.
Okay. All right, Leslie.
I'm sorry, it's not. It occurred to me that this event will happen after our next legislature meeting, so I wanted an opportunity to share a few of them.
Yeah, were there any questions on the items I had? Okay, sure, go ahead.
So, quick question. Is there a contingent of us marching in the Driving Dairy Day Parade? Are we doing it this year? Are we organizing for it this year? No.
Please correct me if I'm wrong, Marcia, but I understand that we didn't get enough sign-ups for that to march.
And no, we didn't.
So they will not be marching.
They will not be marching. Okay. Thank you.
Mike and I always go.
Okay. We'll be there, but it won't be a formal county group.
All right. Thank you. I want to, on June 15th, Saturday, June 15th, is the celebration of Juneteenth in the Southside Community Center. And for those who do not know what Juneteenth is about, this is Pride Month we are celebrating. We're also celebrating what we describe as the final emancipation of slaves, some 2.5 years after the official emancipation of slaves. January 1 of 1863 was the Emancipation Proclamation, declaring all slaves and people in servitude to be free. The slaves in our southern states, particularly Texas, did not get that information until 2.5 years later during the teen days of June, so beginning June 13 through June 19. June 19th is actually officially Juneteenth. So June 13 through 19, where it finally got to them through General Granger that they were actually free, and should have been 2.5 years before that. So slave owners and others did not let them know about the Emancipation Proclamation, they knew no better. And so that day, or during that time, hence the point where Juneteenth is when we celebrate this final
emancipation of slavery here in the United States of America. So please do, everyone is invited to stop by Cleveland Avenue, Plain Street, outside the Southside Community Center, and join in the celebratory festivities honoring such a historic time in African-American history. I wanted to make sure that I share that with all of you, that you can put it on your calendars, and I look forward to seeing everyone there. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. George, you had something else?
Sorry, one thing I forgot to mention that the city and GIEC is very proud of is the new wading pool at Alex Haley swimming pool across the street from GIEC. It's an accessible wading pool, and it opened the same weekend as the Ithaca Festival, and so we're very happy about that. And if you like to wade, come on down.
Thank you, George. This has to get hot enough. A little bit of warmer weather would be good.
Can you ice skate on it?
Thank you, everybody. All right, County Administrator report, Jason Molino.
Yes, I have two things to report. Lisa's going to give a little bit of an update, do the annual report on the compliance program. But before we start with that, I just want to give you an update on early voting. Received some communication from NYSAC today or yesterday about some potential distribution of funds. As you know, in the budget, there was about $14 million worth of funds attributed or appropriated for early voting. There is a proposal waiting for approval by the Director of Budget of the state that we would get some early voting reimbursement of about $60,000, 15 for each site, and then a formula based on the amount of enrollment, or I think the amount registered to vote as of a certain date. And then, so that's about $60,000 for reimbursement of early voting costs, which would be able to cover our costs that we've estimated right now for early voting in terms of staff, some equipment, those types of things. And then there was the question I have, which I don't know that we've answered, is that going to be reoccurring? I don't know the answer to that question yet. The second piece is a capital component, primarily for electronic polling books. That is about $79,000, just under, which is significantly under our estimate as of right now. So I think we estimated closer to $200,000 to $250,000 for electronic polling books. I haven't had a chance to talk to Steve and Elizabeth about this yet, Steve DeWitt and Elizabeth Cree. I did confirm with both of them that these are the numbers we have to date. It has to be approved, and then it'll be distributed to the counties, and then I'll probably follow up with them in a meeting the next few weeks in preparation of polling book purchase, that type of thing. There is some other grant funds that they still have available to them, which is probably about 10 years old from when electronic voting started, electronic ballot started, so we would probably use that first if there's any remaining balance for electronic polling book purchase. So just to kind of give you an update, it's pending Director of Budget approval. It seems to be that this would be roughly the distribution.
Deborah.
So my understanding was that the cost of those electronic polling books was going to be many times $79,000.
That's what I asked Steve. I said it seems to be that we'll cover our costs with the operating costs for the elections, but this seems to be drastically under what we projected. He said, yes, that's correct. The state's explanation is that this would cover a baseline of polling book purchases. I don't know what the definition of baseline is, but I think from what we've looked at, it's not going to cover the cost.
So it's another unfunded mandate.
Yep. I mean, we knew that, I think, going into early voting, that this was an unfunded mandate. Like I said, we'll use some of that grant funding that we have remaining from when electronic voting started. So it'll probably be a net zero impact to us. But it won't be. It'll be taking other funds that we would use otherwise for voting machine replacement.
I thought the state was working on trying to standardize a contract or have a way to bulk purchase or something, or like all of us use the same software, et cetera. Is there any progress on that?
These polling books, as the voting machines, have to be certified. There isn't any polling book that's certified, so. Technically, until they certify a polling book, anybody would not be able to use the polling book
to be able to in an election. So until a polling book is certified or several are certified, you can't purchase anything. My guess is that, and I think what we've heard but can't confirm, is that the state would orchestrate some type of uniform bid, but that's yet to be determined, and every day, as you know, that goes by, it gets closer and closer to elections. So this will be, as it has been, continuing to evolve. Once I meet with Stephen and Elizabeth, I'll know more about some of the details of purchasing polling books and exact numbers and those types of things. They did, I will say that for the last election, they did use a pilot polling book side-by-side with the manual process. Worked out very well. So it was good review, but we're going to have to get something done the next 60 days if they're going to have it by the election this fall.
In the next 60 days to have by the election in the fall?
Probably. At the minimum. I mean, it'd probably be sooner than that. So it's possible they won't have it in time for the election.
And so there will be no early voting?
There'll be early voting. There just won't be electronic polling books, which makes it logistically very challenging. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, more to come.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Lisa's going to give a report on the 2018 compliance program. And right. A report on the prior year.
Before, just one second. Do you have any update on AIM funding and internet sales tax and any of that?
I have nothing new on that. Last I understood it to be was that the state approved AIM funding at its prior levels, although there's a withholding process to ensure that internet sales tax generates enough revenue, and when it hits that threshold, it's then distributed to the municipality, so it will change the dates when it's distributed. Outside of that, I don't know that you'll know much more about internet sales tax until probably 12 or 18 months after it goes into effect, so that you know how it's tracked and what the successes are. I don't know, Rick, if you know anything else more than that, but yeah, there hasn't been anything new on it. Sorry.
All right, thank you. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. So I'm just going to give about 5 minutes or less an update on the compliance program for 2018. You have the progress report in front of you for the most recent year that ended 2018. So one of the many perks of my job is that I get to be the county's compliance officer. And this is a great opportunity to make you aware of the county's compliance program, which is very important, and it exists to ensure that we operate in accordance with all state, federal, and local laws and regulations, to stay up to date on all of those laws and regs, to put safeguards in place to prevent any waste, fraud, or abuse, to facilitate communications among departments on compliance issues, conduct employee trainings, review and revise policies of the county, and develop internal controls. So it's also good for everyone to know that as an organization, the county has a confidential compliance and breach hotline to report allegations of illegal or suspected illegal or unethical conduct involving county employees or elected officials. That hotline is listed on the administration's webpage. The number is 1-877-248-1396. And folks can also file a written complaint to me as the county's compliance officer in county administration. There's much more background on all of that on administration's website, but I thought this was just to give you a soundbite on it. What you have in front of you are the key accomplishments of the compliance program in 2018, which are notable because there were vacancies in both my role as the county's compliance officer and that of the client's compliance program coordinator for many months in 2018. It's also good for you to know that there's an active compliance committee, and the list of those involved on that committee are on the back page of the report. Compliance work, you know, it continues on among all employees and certainly among the compliance committee. And the accomplishments in 2018 are largely due to the work of the committee members. Our ITS department worked with the Department of Homeland Security to complete a security assessment. And this was the fourth year of no reportable breaches of confidential info. So they're doing a great job in terms of protecting the county from cybersecurity. Also, breaches of information. As part of our ongoing monitoring of the Title VI program, we track the usage of by county staff of translation and interpretation services to make sure that we are continuing to provide meaningful access to all individuals accessing the county's programs and services. And in 2018, we utilized those services 442 times at a cost of $16,869. We also provided all employees with annual mandatory compliance-related training. And at the end of 2018, we filled the position of the compliance program coordinator, and in short order, that staff person, Jesse Sputis, began working to provide compliance training to all new hires and began facilitating the policy update process so that we could hit the ground running with the policy updates in 2019. So our plan is to continue to strengthen continue and strengthen these efforts in 2019. And as you know, notably, the review and revision of all of the policies that have been happening this year has been initiated through county administration, but we're working really closely with many departments who are working hard to update their policies. Department heads are reviewing the policies. The GO committee and the full legislature, I just want to say thank you for all of your engagement and participation in this process. As you know, it's having an up-to-date policy manual is a very important component of our compliance program, and thank you all for taking it very seriously, and happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thanks very much, Lisa. Mike Lane.
Nice report. Thinking about something a little sideways here, and that is we're fortunate to be able to look at compliance globally and hire a compliance person to help us do that and have full-time things. What do small municipalities, they must have requirements for these kind of compliances too. I'm thinking of towns and villages. I'm also thinking of, for example, in human resources, we handle the civil service for towns and villages. Is there any inquiry for advice from us on any of these topics that we should be thinking about? Should we be bringing any of this to TCOG so that they're aware that maybe they have obligations that they aren't stepping up to the plate on? Just wondering.
Well, I know that the county's compliance program and many of the documents and the plan that are on our website have been utilized by other municipalities. I know other counties. I know Paula Younger, together with you know, the members of the compliance committee, worked a great deal to put those documents together and in place, and I have heard feedback from other municipalities, namely counties. I can't speak to cities, towns, villages, but it's becoming more and more of an issue for people with the audits through OMEG and other other agencies, that having these policies and programs in place to be able to point to during these audits.
I'm thinking, like, for example, the translation services for services. I can't imagine, you know, a small municipality like a village or something once in a while having to need that. I mean, is it something they can come to us for? Or maybe I'm trying to get too deep into something that we don't have responsibility for, but I'm just thinking ahead.
Sure.
A lot of times they go without. They're not compliant or they don't have the resources to address it. And you know, that happens. We do get a lot of questions from municipalities, like I said, from counties, and also to ask us, you know, how do you handle this issue? So it's not uncommon that we'll get questions, but a lot of communities don't have, you know, the amount of compliance requirements and regulatory requirements. A lot of them either just don't have the ability to do it, or it's on a project-by-project basis. So, for example, certain federal funding may come with certain requirements. So you create it for that project. But to continue it is just it's a resource-driven issue that a lot of people don't have the ability to comply with.
Thank you.
Well, I think I hear Mike suggesting that we let the counties and municipalities know that we have this resource and if that's what they need. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm not sure what I'm saying. Seriously, I don't know. Is that something we ought to offer to them, you know, advice on these things or not?
I mean, if we had 142 instances, I'm going to guess that those people, is that like clients came to it, one of our offices and needed interpretation? So those folks are probably out in the municipalities needing to get services as well. Rich?
I think this would be a good conversation to have at government operations, because implicit in extending these offers, we may be assuming a pretty big responsibility, but it's not, it's one we really should think about. Do we want to make this offer so that the overall operation of all of the municipalities in the county works better? And while I have the microphone, I also did want to commend Jessie Spoutas for the remarkable amount of work she's done on the policies so far, and we'll keep seeing them.
Thank you. I'll pass that along. Also, just to on one more point to note, the vast majority of those requests for translation interpretation services have come through mental health and DSS, I would say like 95 to 99%.
Deborah.
I was just wondering if we offered something like that to the smaller municipalities, whether that would qualify under our shared services plan.
You know, if it's 21,000 for us, and we, even if it's double, I mean, that's a service that would really, I think, help a lot of people, and especially if they're going to mental health and DSS for services, they there might be a real need there. So, you've got the shared services project underway as it is, right? So. Thank you so much. Okay. Anything else for Lisa? All right. Thank you, Lisa. Appreciate it. All right. Thanks for all the hard work. And our thanks to Jesse, too. That it, Jason?
That's all. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Jonathan Wood, county attorney.
I have no report.
You want to actually say that? So we can read your lips, but okay.
Okay. I have no report.
Thank you, Jonathan. Any questions? Yeah. All right. Rick Snyder, finance director.
Well, one of the perks of my job is to do the sales tax allocation every month and to bring you the report. So what we're looking at tonight in your red folders is the April sales tax distribution summary, which was up 1.89% compared to last year. If you look in the middle section there, you can see that our year-to-date distributions over on the right-hand side depict that we have $11,416,086 compared to $11,126,716 in 2018. This represents an increase of $289,370 year over year, or a 2.60% increase for our year to date. And this was our best April of record so far. And we've been looking at sales tax compared to budget at the bottom of each month's report. And you can see, although it looks a little bit under budget, when you look at the gross budget estimate, it comes in at 31.5%. That's comparing our receipts coming in to wherever sales tax is allocated in our overall budget. We're at about 31.5%. If you look at it, how it relates to that portion, which just is recorded in our unallocated sales tax revenue budget, we're only at about 27.7%. Because we're 4 months through the year, you would think that we would be at about 33%. So it looks like we're trailing behind by a couple percent when you look at it. But then again, our sales tax receipts in any given year are not the same each month. There have always been cyclically some quarters that are heavier than others and some months that are better than others. So we are actually above where we were at last year at this time, and very, very well in line with meeting our budget estimate for the year.
Thank you, Rick. Any questions? Mike Lane.
I've got a tidbit about the internet sales tax. this weekend, I was on eBay and had bid on something. I often buy postcards because I collect postcards and things like that. But anyway, from an out-of-state seller, which you wouldn't normally see a sales tax added to the bill on, and there was sales tax added, and a notice from eBay that said, some states are now requiring us to collect sales tax. So I think it's starting. And so I think that's tough for the buyer, but it's great for the state and the county.
We appreciate that, Mike. Yeah. Appreciate your contribution.
I thought
thanks
you would.
For taking one for the team.
Appreciate that.
I always reported it on my income taxes, by the
very
way.
Very important. Appreciate that, too.
I knew you were going to say that. That's right. All right. Anything else for Rick?
I have one other announcement to make. On our auditors have just presented to us their first draft of our annual financial report. Just got it today. We'll be looking at that, making changes and corrections with a second draft coming out about midweek next week, just in time so that we can bring it to the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee meeting, which is on June 21st. That whole committee now serves as our audit committee, and so we are still aiming for the auditors to come to give their presentation of the annual financial report June 21st, 9 o'clock a.m. So if you don't normally go to those meetings, but you just can't wait to hear the audit report, why don't you come and hear the auditor's presentation? If you don't, you can wait another month. At some time in July, you'll be able to hear the Rick Snyder version of the annual report brought to you here at a regular legislative meeting.
It's a real page turner.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Rick.
Will there be a movie?
Is there a musical version? Okay. All right. Thank you. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? All right. Kathy, am I right? There's no consent agenda.
Correct.
I think that's the first time I've ever, you know. Okay. All right. Well, then, let us go to committee reports. The first committee is Housing and Economic Development. Anna Kellis, Chair.
Unexpectedly quickly. We had a meeting on May 23rd. Just really quickly, if people want to look at the agenda packet, the topics that we covered included a presentation from Tompkins Workforce New York Career Center. The diagram of all the different boards and all the different agencies that work at the center and the Workforce Development Board and how they relate to each other is very, very complicated. So it took about 20, 25 minutes for her to explain that. But it is part of a larger initiative in the committee this year to really get to dive deep into workforce development. What is the system we have in place? What is the support that we have in place? What are the gaps? There will be a presentation coming up in the next month or two from, hopefully, Workforce Development Board and TCAD on where we are right now, how many people are unemployed, how many people do we estimate have left the workforce, what is the demographic of those different groups, and where are we and where do we need to go, what opportunities exist. And so hopefully for the rest of the year we'll take the opportunity to delve into where some opportunities for support for strengthening our workforce development program. So that was that presentation. We also had a lengthy strategic tourism presentation, and I wanted to thank Nick Helmholt, who has done an amazing job in educating us on what is going on in working towards the new strategic plan, which will be a 10-year plan moving forward for STPB, and gave us a really solid sense of what the focus is right now. And I just wanted to summarize by saying the emerging priorities from all the discussions that have happened, and this is important for all of us to know because of all the discussions we've had over the last 2 years about STPB funding. And from all the analysis that have been done, as well as what the priorities are of tourists, the things that are bubbling to the surface are higher education, outdoor recreation, wayfinding, and the conference center. So those will be some of the things that they'll be focusing on, with a particular focus on outdoor recreation, which has been under-prioritized, but it is a primary focus for a lot of the tourists. We got an update on ACOD, so please do look at the packet for anybody who's interested in the review that has happened for the Arts and Culture Organizational Development Grant. And that's generally what we covered. We also had a presentation on from TCAD, from Heather McDaniels, on the labor data that they have been collecting. And it was a very interesting conversation, some limitations on what labor sectors we have here. But that data will ultimately be used by the IDA and by TCAD to evaluate policies related to local labor. So more to come on that, but it was a very good presentation. And that's everything.
Thanks very much, Anna. Any questions for Anna? Thank you. Public Safety Committee, Rich John, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. The regular meeting of the Public Safety Committee will be June 20th at 3 o'clock here in the chambers. We did not have a regular scheduled meeting since our last meeting. However, we did have a special meeting of the Public Safety Committee here in chambers in as a joint meeting with the City's Planning and Economic Development Committee. And the purpose of that meeting was to start an initial conversation about the possibility of co-location. We're at a very interesting moment in terms of both the city and the county looking at their public safety facility needs at the same time. And so if we don't look at it now, we won't be able to look at it later. The idea of co-locating the Sheriff's Department, Road Patrol, and Civil Division with the Ithaca City Police Department was the subject of the discussion. We heard from some consultants who had recommended a particular parcel of land at 100 Commercial Avenue and just started a conversation about it. The Public Safety Committee will be considering a resolution to authorize preparation of a planning RFP, and the city will be doing the same resolution at their next scheduled meeting. This is a long road that we will go down if we follow it, and it may be that we decide we don't want to go down it, but it is an important thing for us to look at. So that started last week.
Thank you, Rich. Any questions? Comments? Rich, I want to say it was a well-run meeting, and thank you very much for spearheading it. The proposal that the committee will be looking at now, would that be an operations study as well as, sort of have to do operations and programming before you can do architecture?
Correct. It's going to proceed in parallel. We're going to probably need to get two different consultants. We'll wait for city and county staff to put together how the RFPs look. But certainly it's going to have an architectural and engineering component to look at the building and try to estimate costs. But then we're also going to have an operational study of how would the two police departments sitting next to each other, how would they work together, and what kind of shared services would we have? Would it be possible to do central booking, central arraignment? And, of course, it will intersect with discussions about how our jail would operate, too. So it's a very complicated and consequential discussion, both in terms of money, because any of the decisions would lead to the spending of a lot of money if it goes forward, but also in terms of function and how we would want to make sure that it truly is improving public safety in the community.
So operations would really affect your operations analysis if the jail is on the same site versus stays in Lansing?
Certainly. And the county is shortly going to undertake an existing condition survey of the jail. And the point of that is to really look at our jail and see what its physical condition is. We've had some preliminary examinations by our director of facilities, which indicate we probably need to make a pretty large capital investment in the jail, either in renovation or an addition or building a new jail. And I want to stress that isn't a bigger jail in terms of beds, but a more functional jail with better program space, better medical facilities, better kitchen. And not to get too far into the weeds, but one of the big issues is that the plumbing and the mechanicals for the jail are inside the secure space. And so trying to make repairs or to work on those systems is exceedingly difficult. And it's not typically how jails are built now. So even if we put a lot of money into the current facility, it's not clear that we would end up with a more functional facility. So we've got some very hard decisions to make.
So to be clear, which county staff are working on this? Jason and who else?
Well, certainly the sheriff's pretty interested.
Yeah, right.
Sheriff, yeah. Right now, they're all involved.
All right. Thank you very much. Anything else for Rich? Thank you, Rich. Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair.
We have not met since our last legislative meeting, and we will meet this Friday, June 7th at 9 a.m.
And we just sort of added something to your agenda this afternoon.
We did. We will be looking at the charter change for the Human Rights Commission. So that draft was just sent to everyone on that committee. So please look it over. And if you have comment, we will discuss it Friday.
Just kind of reviewing the language. Yeah. Okay. All right. Any questions for Shauna? Thank you, Shauna. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair. You have most of the juice tonight.
Well, yes. F&I has not met since the last ledge meeting. However, I have five resolutions from the meeting, which was a couple days prior to the last ledge meeting. So, first one is Resolution A, and that is to approve funding agreement between County of Tompkins and Town of Ulysses for N3756.59, replacement of Cemetery Road Bridge over Trumansburg Creek, Bend 3210360, and that's document ID 8643, and I would move it.
Seconded by Annie. Discussion? Okay, ready to vote? Short form roll call.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Anna Kellis?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous.
Okay. Resolution B, document ID 8647, approve a contract with Labella Associates, DPC, for design services for PIN 3756.52, replacement of Central Chapel Road Bridge, County Route 115, over Boise Creek, then 104-6020, Town of Caroline, and I would move that.
Second by Dan Klein. Discussion? Short form roll call.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Anna Kellis?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous.
Resolution C, document ID 8649. Approve a funding agreement with New York State Department of Transportation for PIN 3756.52, replacement of Central Chapel Road Bridge, County Route 115, over Boise Creek, PIN 104-6020, Town of Caroline, and I would move that.
Seconded by Dan Klein again. Discussion? All right, roll call?
Nope.
No roll call. Okay. I bet the last one didn't have to be a roll call, did it? I'm not sure. Anyway, huh?
Resolution D.
B, okay. All right. So all in favor of Resolution C, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous.
Okay. Resolution D, ID 86, or document ID 8650. Approve a contract with Barton and Judas, DPC, for design services for PIN 3756.53. replacement of Etna Lane Bridge, County Route 109 over Fall Creek, Bend 33-14-18-0, Town of Dryden. And I would move that with two changes, or one change. The dollar amount is not $371,000. It is $219,000 in all four locations.
Okay. I see Mike's hand. Mike Lane seconds. Any discussion? I'm a little concerned about the width of this. I wrote to Jeff Smith, the highway director. It's right now 28 feet approximately, and it sounds like they're going to add lane width as well as a pedestrian lane. So I've said my piece. Just knowing that neighborhood, bridges always seem really wide to me anyway.
But it's being done with federal money, and that requires certain lane sizes. So hands are tied if you want the money.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. Is this a short form? Okay, go ahead.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Anna Kellis?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous.
Okay. Resolution E, document ID 8631. Approve a funding agreement with New York State Department of Transportation for PIN 3756.53. Replacement of Etna Lane Bridge, County Route 109 over Fall Creek, Bend 33-14-18-0, Town of Dryden. And I move it.
Second by Mike Lane. Discussion? All right. This is just we raise our hands. Yeah, like I'm going to ask you later about which is which.
I have a correction on that one also.
Okay.
Bear with me a second. The same dollar amounts, $371,000, is actually $219,000 in all four locations.
Okay, great. That's right, Mike?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, all in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you.
All right. That concludes my report.
Thank you very much, Dave. All right. Government Operations, Mike Lane, Chair.
Yes, we haven't met since our last legislature meeting. We will meet again on Thursday, June 6th at 1:30 here in Chambers, and we will spend most of our time discussing policies, speaking of page-turners. We're moving that along. That's one of our goals, to try to get through a number of our these policies before the end of the year. Also, we'll mention, as long as I've got the microphone here on this committee, that the new complete census count committee will be having its first meeting on Thursday, June 13th at 9 a.m. here in legislature chambers.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions for Mike? I had written that down along with the Downtown Facilities Committee as additional committees that we're going to start adding to our list for reports. So thanks for mentioning the, should we call it the C4 committee? So.
I don't know how you're going to alliterate that, but
okay.
It's fine.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Deborah Dawson, Chair.
Thank you. We met on the 28th. We had a very full agenda, including EMC's annual report, farm-to-school grant that CCA is working on, or CCE, rather. Gay Nicholson reported on the lead issue in Lansing. The representatives of Cayuga Power Plants owners, whatever they're calling themselves these days, also came in, presented about their proposed data center. And Joan Jerkowitz from DPS came and talked about updating the county's comp plan and presented a list of action items that they would be considering for the coming year, which is a pretty thankless job. Speaking of which, Annie and I attended a presentation that Joan made at the library last night. It was poorly attended because it's not sexy and interesting like a Green New Deal. But I will say that I was impressed that there was a representative from the Sunrise Movement, who was there and paying attention and contributing, and mentioned that she was planning on attending the first meeting that EMC is doing on the 12th to discuss with the public the study on our forest management plan, which is, again, not a particularly sexy topic. I'm encouraged that these Sunrise kids are so involved. I'm encouraged that they recognize that it's not just the big, sexy, flashy stuff that matters. It's these little things, the accretion of small accomplishments and programs that will get us where we want to go. And so I will stop editorializing there. We also passed a motion, which is in your packet, urging the New York State Climate and Community Protection Act to be passed and signed into law as soon as possible. That's ID number 8677, and I move that now.
Seconded by Ann Corman. All right. Anna.
I would like to offer a substitution that's in the red packets to the resolution that passed through committee.
All right. And read the title.
The title of this substituted version is urging the state legislature and Governor Cuomo to pass comprehensive climate legislation during the 2019 legislative term. And that is in reference to ID 8677.
All right. Some questions. Is that friendly to Deborah and Anna?
Yes.
Annie?
Yes.
Okay. So that substitute is in front of us now.
So do I still have the floor, Martha?
Yeah. I actually wanted to ask you about the comprehensive plan, the meeting that was there. Are there going to be other meetings?
They indicated that there would be, and I would hope that they would be better attended.
Okay. Ann Corman, about the meeting?
Right. I just wanted to add to that. That was the only public meeting. The other ones are going to be with, for instance, municipalities.
Okay.
That was a question I had. I was hoping more people would come. I wanted to second what Deborah said. It would be nice if people would come to help us plan and give us their input versus just come out when they see an issue. But.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. On to Resolution F. So, Deborah, go ahead.
Well, I sent you all an email explaining why there has been this change. I hope you all read it. I'm sorry that I occasioned the necessity for this substitution, but I got a little bit ahead of myself. In my defense, it was a long weekend, and I didn't want to bother staff, and there wasn't really anybody I could consult with. So I did not realize that there were actually three bills, climate bills, before the state legislature right now. One of them is a DOA bill. It would probably be the best bill in terms of efficacy. It would probably actually stand a chance of making a huge difference in how we run things, but it won't pass. So we're not going to talk about that one. The Climate and Community Protection Act is an act that has been passed by the Assembly now for 4 years. This is the first time it's had a chance at getting passed through the legislature because, of course, we now have a Democratic Senate. The Climate Leadership Act was part of Governor Cuomo's budget bill. I don't really know why things happen in Albany the way they do, but apparently they pulled that bill, or he pulled that bill, and they were supposed to be working on climate after the budget process was finished. There is a lot of disagreements, probably not the right word, but everyone has an opinion about which bill is most effective, which bill is most desirable, and the consensus appears to be, among knowledgeable people anyway, that some combination of the provisions of these two acts would be the best result we could hope for. I do not seek to substitute my judgment for Albany's as to which provisions of which bill should be included, but I just thought that we should urge our state legislature to pass the best bill they possibly can this term, because otherwise it's going to be the middle of 2020 and the clock's ticking.
Thank you, Deborah. Anna?
I want to first thank Deborah. I know that it was a long weekend, and you spent probably three-fourths of it reading about 50 pages of very, very small print, and I'm surprised you're not blind by now. So thank you very much for your work on this. A few things that I do want to add for anyone who has any reservations about it. In our conversations, Deborah and I have talked about this, and I know others have talked about this. It's not perfect. I don't think that anything could start out perfect, because something needs to get put on the table first, and the effort of seeing what does or doesn't work needs to happen. So I appreciate what you're saying of just get something on the books. It does outline that the scoping plan will happen after the act is passed, and that there will be regular updates. And one of the things that Deborah and I added to this was specifically that as new scientific technology and understanding within the climate science arena comes forward, that we urge the legislature to incorporate that into the scoping plan and the enforcement mechanism. So I just wanted to note that it is outlined in the legislation itself that they recognize that things need to be updated regularly.
Thanks, Anna. Mike Sigler?
So I've read over everything, at least everything that's been presented by the people on this legislature. I haven't read all these different state bills. I don't plan to go read all these state bills. I'm not going to vote for any of this, and I'm going to tell you why. It's not because I don't believe in global warming. It doesn't mean that I don't believe that man is contributing to it. There's a group actually called Fossil Free Tompkins. I don't agree with them. Fossil Free Tompkins, no fossil fuels, right? I believe natural gas is a good fuel. I think if we spent money on tightening up the pipelines and the piping systems that go to our homes so that there isn't any leakage or as little leakage as possible, it's a good fuel. It's a clean fuel. They don't agree. The reason I like the group, though, is it's a simple message. Fossil free. We're not going to burn any more fossil fuels. The resolution right here in front of me, resolution number F, it goes into a lot of stuff. 18 paragraphs. You want a solution to global warming? If you think that man is causing it and that we have 12 years to solve this problem, guess what? It's easy. Stop burning carbon. Stop burning fossil fuels. That really, you could just do a resolution that said, we pledge not to burn fossil fuels in this state. And that would be it. That would literally, the whole sentence would need to be that. And that would do more than, it seems like every time I read something, we're setting a goal. Ithaca's Green New Deal. We're going to set a goal, and this is going to be our goal. And we're going to do a study on this for 2 more years so that we can kind of figure out what to do. It's like, I don't get it, man. You know what to do. That's not the problem. You need the political will to actually do it. And I'm at a loss with all of this. I went and talked to Senator May. She was going around. She had 3 different meetings. She had one in Syracuse. I actually got to speak last. I didn't really expect me. And I said the same thing to her. Listen, if that's what you're saying, that we have 12 years. I mean, one of the leaders of the Democratic Party right now is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She says 12 years. She equates this to World War II. This is World War II? World War II, sacrifice. It took sacrifice to go and do these things, right? Well, yeah. You know, if you're saying that we need to stop burning fossil fuels, then it's going to require a lot of sacrifice from people. And I don't understand why we're setting this up as something so complicated. It's not that complicated. You know, we are now creating power in upstate New York, and power appears cheap. Power in New York City is expensive. Where do we need the power? We need it in New York City. They need to start producing more power downstate. So it's either run hydro from Canada through a big mass of wires that need to be built along the Hudson, and that's on the radar for the governor right now, or you build a couple more nukes and you don't shut down the nukes that the governor is planning to close. Or you invest a lot in hydropower, which the state has decided not to do because it's never in any kind of plan. They talk about wind and they talk about solar, but guess what? When we build solar, we're building it upstate because that's where the land is. And we don't need any more power up here. You need a way to get it downstate to where people are, like the mass of people are living. So I would like to see us, as a state, stop talking about goals, stop talking about, oh, we can get there in 2030 and say, no, we're going to invest this much money in how to get power from Canada to get it downstate. And guess what? It's going to cost a lot of money. And by the way, ratepayers, it's going to be on you, and that's going to cost you X amount more per kilowatt hour. Are you okay with that? And if people aren't okay with it, they're going to vote them out of office. But if people are, and we all believe that they are, then they'll get voted back into office. But this idea that we're going to say things that look and sound great, and yeah, those people, they're fighting for us. No, because it's all BS, and I'm tired of all the BS. I would rather see some people say this is what we're doing and just get it done. So that's my two cents on that. Thank you.
Anna, then Deborah.
All right, so I'm going to make an amendment that says, whereas, get her done. And then that would do it for you? I'm just, okay. So I do want to point out, I appreciate that, I respect that, I do not need to change your mind, we don't have to do the Mike Anna show. But I do want to point out one thing, it does say 100% by 2050, which is pretty much that, so I'm a little confused. But I do want to point out for everyone else here, because I would love to have this be bipartisan support. I really, really would. This will create jobs also. This is a movement in a direction that there is already impetus. And we are basically trying to stay competitive as a state. Even talking to some of the reps in the world of the energy sector are telling me the way of natural gas, that is the past. The way of renewable is where, even with the business models, they are looking and they understand. So this is also economic development. This is practical. Just speaking from that standpoint, I would really urge everyone to consider that it is forward thinking, and will put us, I think, in a stable position economically as well as sustainable. So I just wanted to add that piece.
Deborah?
Well, that was a great speech, Mike. But seriously disingenuous. If it were as simple as to just say, okay, tomorrow we're going to stop burning fossil fuel, we would have done it a long time ago, I think, at least in this county. But you know very well it's not that simple. First of all, you can't just switch, flip a switch. The technology's not there tomorrow. And if we could flip a switch, we'd sink the economy. I mean, it's complicated because reality is complicated. If we're going to make this shift away from fossil fuels, we have to do it over time in ways that don't cripple our economy and in ways that don't exacerbate the kind of inequalities and disproportional impacts that climate change has on working class and poor and vulnerable communities. And that's why we have Green New Deals sprouting up like dandelions everywhere, because people are trying to figure out how to do that. I think it's going to take more than one bill. I think it's going to be a long, slow process. But if we don't get started, we're never going to get there. As they say, a journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step, and I guess I would just like to see our legislature take the first step.
Please.
It would be nice if you would vote for it. It would be nice if it was a bipartisan show of support.
Can I bring up the point that this county has actually made the first step and did so quite a while ago?
No, I know the county has.
So it's like, thanks for coming.
This is a state bill.
We have whole people on staff that this is all they do. So I mean, I appreciate what you're saying, like take the first step, but no, we're pretty into it already.
It's a state bill.
Yeah,
this said that it's a state bill. So what? This county's way ahead of the state. Good for
one us. County isn't going to turn things around.
Okay. Anybody else? Rich.
I'm going to support the resolution, but Mike, I agree with you. You know, and you have to say the words, and I'm going to support the resolution for that reason, but I think we also have to face the reality that doing something about this is sacrifice, that we are going to see tremendous change. Some people will benefit from it. There's certainly a lot of jobs and economic activity that will come from this, but there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be really hurting. And trying to do it in a way that doesn't cause excessive pain, it's not easy. But I'm going to vote for it because I think these are the things we should be saying. We should be encouraging New York State to say the right things and hopefully following it up with New York State doing the right actions.
Annie?
Thank you. I want to just first thank Deborah for all your hard work on this and spending days and days and not bothering us over the weekend, the holiday weekend. And
you were catching.
I was, right. So if you had, maybe you did bother me and I didn't see your email. So, and I want to say, I know Mike, you know, has solar panels and has done other things, so I appreciate what you're doing. And so at this time, too, we can look at, are we doing everything? Look in your own backyard. Are you doing everything you can? But I think the focus of talking about this, I think, should be about the state, and this is the state taking a big step. When I first saw it, when I saw it at the first one at Peak, I said, well, this isn't great. This isn't what I'd like to see. This is better, but really what I was referring to was this also the state. You know, they are not going in the as fast as I would like to see, but this is a big step for them. And so I will, if this provides a little bit of encouragement or, yeah, go get her done, then I'm going to say yes to this. I hope most people will. So thank you.
I would add that, you know, we don't make state policy. We make county policy and make county investments. And there was actually a meeting earlier this week to talk about the energy strategy and where do we go. And Katie brought a thick packet of the things we've done since 1998 to fight climate change. And, yeah, it'd be great if New York State had a list like that. I mean, NYSERDA does a lot of stuff. I mean, there's a lot that has happened, but what we see here is the first step legislatively to create policy. So this is, frankly, and I've said this before, as maybe it's cynical, but I think when our resolutions come by whoever's desk gets them, if the title says something important and compelling, I think that's kind of the best we're going to hope for. This is just saying, get her done. This is just saying, pass something this session. It's a political statement. It's a statement of urgency. We could have said, hey, New York, look what all we've done. You know, get moving. It's possible you can do it too. But, you know, I think it was a wise move to... I mean, Deborah, you spent a ton of time. Anna, you were involved too. And I think the idea of trying to evaluate, you know, what's exactly the right policy, we really can't do that for the state. But I think that this is what we can do, is be the voice at the other end saying this is really, really critical. So I agree that it would be highly effective, much more beneficial if this could be a unanimous vote. So I can't, you know, obviously make anybody do that, but I think since it is a political statement, I think it's a way of saying our
our views are in this direction. And this body has already done many things unanimously that basically walk the walk. So I hope that people can support this tonight. Anna?
I just want to say one thing. I'm super confused. To say that we are the cause, recognize the cause, one of the major causes of climate change, and that climate change exists, and that greenhouse gas emissions are caused by carbon emissions, and therefore this is something we wouldn't vote for, which says that we want to address all of those things so we can reduce our carbon emissions. Does not make any sense to me. So I'm having some difficulty following just the simple logic. The logic that we in the county do a great job, therefore we're not going to support the state following suit, also doesn't make very much sense. I really have a hard time with it. So I just feel like I had to say that. It's a logic that seems not to have logic. So I hope that you'll reconsider and urge the state to follow suit in what we do and what you feel proud of. So,
are we ready to vote?
We're missing Mike Lane.
What?
We're missing Mike Lane.
We can tap dance for another minute or so. So, did anybody else have anything to add?
I'd like to thank one of my favorite constituents, Anthony Ingraffia, for his time and patience explaining how these things work to me, because I still am on a pretty steep learning curve with energy and the environment. And now I'll dance.
And I appreciate that you called yourself a reluctant environmentalist, because
yeah.
You helped Chair Peak, so that's great. I mean,
well, if I'm going to chair it, I guess I'll try to do a bang-up job.
That's good. Thank you, Deborah. And I would recognize that Barbara Lifton has spent a lot of time on Assembly A3876, and that was one of the sources of information about this. So, all right, I'm going to guess Mike might not want to vote on this. I don't know, but we'll go ahead. And all right, all in favor of Resolution F, the substitute that we have on the table, please raise your hand. Opposed? That is 12 yes and one no. So it passes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody.
Anything else, Deborah? Yeah, Dan.
Yeah, I had one question about the report.
Yes.
So you mentioned a meeting next week about the forestry plan.
Right.
Which is something that got a lot of attention here. Has anything gone out about that? I haven't seen anything.
I thought the EMC had sent something out. Well, then how did the gal from...
know about it?
Because I said it.
Oh, okay. Well, so...
At an EMC meeting, that I think, they said that. So I just
I will tell Brian Eden that he needs to get that information out again if he already did it and we missed it.
And it's a little early in the evening. It's on the 12th, Wednesday, at 5 to 6:30.
Where?
The Tompkins County Public Library.
Yeah,
Four Corner Room, of course.
That's the EMC meeting, and the forest plan is one of the items?
No, it's a meeting to get public comment. Sorry.
Yeah, they're soliciting public comment as part of their review process. They want to get input from members of the public, and just as we all got plenty of it when the issue was before us.
Okay. That's June 12th, 5 o'clock at the library. Amanda.
So I'm the EMC liaison, and I did not know about this.
Oh, boy.
He mentioned it in passing once at a meeting. I saw one email, somebody questioned, and he said, we'll take care of it. There's been very little communication about this to the legislature, which is a bit shocking considering there was a big, giant fight about it. So we might need to check in on what's going on.
Well, if you and I both do it, I think they'll get the message.
So this is supposed to be public comment on the draft plan, but that hasn't gone out?
I think it's just soliciting public comment on what their opinions are on how trees should be managed, if trees should be managed at all.
Okay.
But there's been no, like, press to put this out to get the public there to do it. So
since this was just me bringing this up, I'm like double checking to see if I accidentally wrote it down, but I'm checking the schedule at the library on that day, and it confirms that time. It says Tompkins County EMC County Forested Lands Management Plan.
So none of us here are responsible for that. We'll find out.
All right. Yeah. Okay. All right. Anything else for Deborah? Thank you very much. Budget capital and we'll come back to Mike. Leslie, Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne, Chair.
Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee met on May 22nd. I'm trying to think of all the things we talked about, though. I don't remember. Mostly, we had a good conversation about where things are moving along with the climate survey. And we pointed out that there were four working teams that are moving some things along. There's a diversity and inclusion infusion team. It was also, I have to remember what they all are, and Amy, you're going to have to help me out. We have the communications team. We have, please help me out here. I know diversity, inclusion,
diversity
and infusion.
Inclusion
that one I have.
Right.
Performance evaluation.
Evaluation.
And employee engagement.
There you go. Thank you. And it's exciting to know that we have about 30 or so employees across the board who are engaged in these teams so that it becomes really an employee-driven movement rather than a movement that's driven by us as legislators. That way we expect to see some good change within the organization. We did have a little more conversation about the FLAC policy, those changes. I know we're incorporated and going back, or might have already gone back to GO. Thursday, Annie already mentioned the Pride flag being flown. We talked some about that. We sort of started to revisit a reading and discussion program and how we continue to make that happen because it's such a valuable tool, and I want to be thankful to Christina Dravis, I think is, Irene, and one other person whose name I'm blanking on now, who are willing to take it up and continue the program so that we don't lose it. And the other discussion we had was about our advisory board application and how we create a space on the advisory board application that allows people to share with us what they bring to whatever the advisory committee is relative to diversity and inclusion experience, expertise, skill sets, whatever it is. We did get some feedback from Jonathan because we're a little overzealous in what we wanted to put on it. We got feedback from Jonathan. I think we've arrived at a good compromise of language that we can put there that's not going to get us in any sort of trouble. So for the most part, I think those were the bigger things on our agenda. I think someone for next meeting coming up, we were going to talk a little bit about the living wage. We're going to try to get someone in to talk about that. That's where we are.
Thank you, Leslie. Any questions for Leslie? All right. Thank you very much. Mike, we're going to go back to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Mike,
sorry,
Lane, Chair.
Leave the room. Can I just say first that had I been present for the vote on Resolution F, I would have voted yes.
Thank you.
Budget, Capital, and Personnel has not met since our last meeting. As Rick told you, we'll be meeting again on the 21st at 9 o'clock, starting with the audit and continuing with our regular agenda. I have a couple of resolutions. If there are no questions, we'd like to move Resolution G, adoption of Local Law Number D of 2019, a local law overriding tax levy limit for 2020. That's ID 8645. I so move it.
Second by Leslin. Discussion? Mike Lane, go ahead.
This is something we have done every year since the first enactment of the 2%, quote-unquote 2% levy cap from the state, which, by the way, the state legislature in its infinite wisdom has now made permanent. We have only overridden the tax levy limit, I think, twice since it first came on, and we haven't in the last two or three years, I know that. But we always do this just in case, and then when we don't need to do it, we go ahead and repeal it, simply because we don't want to have it make a mistake and get punished the following year if we make a mistake on the tax levy increase. This is with respect to the cap, permanent cap on the tax levy override. Just think about that in comparison with the no cap on the unfunded state mandates. And Deborah mentioned one. Think about what they've done to us on AIM funding versus another one.
I would agree with that, and it's been this year we have plenty of allowance under the cap, it appears, but it really is.
Some years we haven't had that.
Right, and it's just a safety valve to pass this resolution or pass this local law. So I hope we can do that. Any questions? Discussion? Ready to vote? Anne, are you raising your hand to vote or?
Voting.
Oh, you just voted. All right.
I'm so excited about this.
All in favor, please raise your hands. Opposed? That passes 11-3.
I want to say that I'm voting out of respect to Mr. Stein, who used to vote against this as well. So I just want to bring
it up. Nice try. And Mike, you have the next one?
Resolution H, increase in the 2020 fiscal target, the Department of Human Resources. That's ID 8668. I move that.
Seconded by Glenn. Mike.
This has to do with the reorganization proposed for our Human Resources Department. And in your red packet, you'll find the information that was given to the Budget Committee, and in particular, the proposed new organizational chart side by side with the present organization chart for that department. And we have the recommendation of the county administrator to move ahead with this. It's going to cost more money to do this reorganization, not this year. There's apparently money in this year's budget, which will hold us harmless for the new positions. But we expect that there will be an increase in target request for the new budget. Jason, have I got that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Discussion? Questions? Leslin?
So I will support this tonight, although I have a little bit of reservation about, and I voiced this when Amy was here. She's not here, and so I don't want to go too much into it. But I just want to say that I will support it tonight, but I still have some reservations, especially around what for me are two, the Director of Human Resources and what that person will be doing, and then the Recruitment Administrator as well. So, but I will support it and hope that I can engage in further discussion when Amy's around and understanding better. I still don't have a clean sense of what these folks will be doing and why this reorganization will work better. But I'm going to trust our county administrator as well, just this once.
Rich John?
I just had a question. The third whereas shows a change in title for one of the boxes, but it looks like more than that is changing on this this org chart, and I just wanted to make sure that the resolution is accomplishing what you want to try to do.
It does. The other two changes don't require legislative action.
Thank you.
I have a question. Whereas line 17 talks about, in the resolution, talks about increased oversight of the employee return to work program. Is that a specific program?
It has to do with employees that are coming back from leave, different types of leave, mm-hmm. FMLA, disability, those types of things.
But is it a specific program?
What?
Is it a specific program? I don't know if I can answer that question. Okay. I mean, it has to do with employees when they're on different types of leave. That's what it means.
Okay. Yeah. And then on the chart, which it's the first time I've seen it, there's a deputy commissioner of human resources and a director of human resources. And the commissioner of human resources, I'm
confused.
What are the differences there? And is the deputy commissioner, I guess the M87 is the job title, is the job line or whatever. So that's one step higher than the director of human resources, which is M86. So are those two people both direct reports to the commissioner?
Yes.
Okay. Can you describe the differences between their jobs?
One is going to be focused more on the civil service component of the positions. Keep in mind, our human resource department is also the civil service entity for all the other municipalities and school districts in the county, with the exception of the city. The director of human resources will be focused more on employee relation issues that are related to anywhere from discipline to employee counseling to those types of matters. So there is a distinct difference between the two.
Okay. Thank you. And just one more question is the budget lines at the bottom of the resolution, the $21,000, that's salary, and the $10,000 is fringe?
That's correct. The current position is part-time.
Okay.
It's going to full-time.
Got it. All right. Thank you. Anna?
I'm still trying to understand. I appreciate the attempt to streamline a bit and have a real focus on civil service, because it's very complicated, and separating it out from the internal human resources. I still don't understand why they are not equivalents, where, you know, like two deputy commissioners.
It's an option. We had this conversation with Amy about that. This was the option she preferred. I can't speak to the exact reason as to why, but the other alternative would be to have two deputy commissioners, one focused on employee relations, one focused on civil service.
The reason I ask, it seems a lot more logical to me, because they seem to have an equal level of responsibility and importance, and to put one under the other just doesn't make any sense to me.
Leslie, this is the exact question you brought up as well, as I have. I expressed that, and, you know, and Amy did not want to do that. She felt that this was a better structure for her.
Did she give any rationale for why it was better?
I think it'd be best for her to explain that, to be honest with you.
I just feel uncomfortable supporting it. If I feel like I wish this would come back with her here so she can explain, because okay. It seems like something I wouldn't want to work in, a situation where they're slightly uneven and yet have equal responsibilities. I'd feel awkward.
Understood.
Okay, but you said the new director is not under the deputy commissioner. You said they're both direct reports to the commissioner.
That's correct.
Okay.
One's paid less.
Slightly lower grade. That's
less level.
Right, but not in terms of supervisory line.
Correct.
Deborah and then Amanda.
Well, I have to say, I think that you assume that they have equal responsibility, but having spent 30 years working in a civil service environment, and also, you know, having been a union rep in that environment, civil service is its own Byzantine little universe, and it's possible that slightly elevating
the person who's responsible for all of the civil service stuff is a reasonable choice.
Possible. It would just be great if she's here to answer that question.
Deborah. Amanda and then Leslie.
What I remember from the conversation at Budget Committee was that she did not want a new person coming in to be at the same level as the person who's already been here without that new director having, there would be nowhere to go. There'd be nowhere to go up. That would be the top. So with this, she's sort of, this person would be one step down and have the opportunity to
advance.
That's what I remember from the conversation.
Leslie and then Anna and then.
So I do remember that, and my dear darling friend Deborah, for the other half of us who work in dealing with employee issues and personnel and human resources issues, that's a heavy lift. Not necessarily have prescriptions like civil service does. Civil service has some very specific steps. Oftentimes their part doesn't have as much, the other half of this. So it is a heavy lift, and that's probably why I was having a little bit of a reaction to it being at that level. But I do remember, thank you, Amanda, that conversation, and I think that was the swear for me. Hopefully we can get more information from Amy, but I'm more than happy to support it as it is.
She's at the personnel officer, New York State Personnel Officers Conference right now with Laura, her deputy, in Albany. So we had talked about trying to come back or not being able to come back.
Yeah.
So that's why she's not here. It's not that she's at the actual New York State Personnel Officers Conference today.
Right. I think she is a vice president.
Anna and then Henry.
Yeah, I appreciate that explanation, Amanda, and I hear that. I think for me, we hire directors and commissioners, and we identify the position that we need, and we fill the position that we need. I've never heard of a rationale, and this is, of course, nothing that is against anyone here. I'm just speaking from seeing what's in front of me. I've sort of never heard the rationale of let's make a lower level position than what we need so that they can grow into the position just in case they might not have the credentials for the position right away or whatever it is. I feel like create a position, fill the position, you get the person who has the experience to fill the position.
Your time's up, Anna.
Who did that?
Henry.
Oh, you did that?
No, it's not. Go ahead.
Next,
were you finished?
Henry wants
That's
to speak, apparently.
Speechless.
Much appreciated. I will rise for that one.
Are you all done?
It's all done.
Okay, yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. There's no time to yield to anybody else.
Yeah. Henry.
I'm under recruitment administrator. The new level is a C64, but the previous one was an M86.
Say that again.
Yes.
How does that compare into levels?
It's a lower pay grade. There were also some other elements of the position that were taken out of the prior job description. It also is shifting from a management position to a confidential position. It took some other duties and responsibilities out. What we found is that the position to focus clearly on recruitment and diversity and inclusion issues was a lot to handle for one position. This is basically downgraded to just recruitment.
How about the diversity and inclusion?
Sure.
Who's dealing with that?
That's not included in this new job description.
But is it included in the office?
Not right now, it's not.
Okay, is there a plan to add it back in?
There is not. This was focused just to focus on the recruitment piece.
Okay, I'm not sure why you would eliminate that part.
You know, maybe best for you to table this resolution to have the commissioner come and explain to you the changes in all of these. I'm sorry, I can't articulate it better.
Is there any time urgency on this?
You can do it at the next meeting if you want to table and bring it back.
Yeah, I move to table it.
Oh. I second that.
All right, let's just see if the committee chair is willing to just withdraw it for now.
Sure, I can withdraw it and bring it back next time.
Okay.
There will be another, when's the next budget capital personnel meeting?
The 21st.
That's after. Right. The next.
After.
Okay. All right. All right, so if we can see if Amy can come to the next ledge meeting, and if there's any additional background material that can come to us, that'd be awesome.
I will give her some background for this conversation today.
Okay. All right. Appreciate that. Thanks very much. All right. Is that the end of your report, Mike?
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much. One more, and then I think we'll break, and I know we're going past our usual time, Jim, up in the booth. Before we break, I have the Downtown Facilities Committee, Glenn Morey, chair. Do you have a report?
Not right now. Our first meeting will be June 14th.
That's the report.
That's the report.
At what time?
Nine o'clock.
9 o'clock.
9 o'clock in this room, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much. Questions? All right. Can I get a motion on the minutes from May 21st, 2019? Moved by Deborah, seconded by Shauna. Any comments, suggestions? All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. Can I get a motion to go into an executive session to talk about labor negotiations? I do not expect for us to go to take any action after the executive session. Moved by Henry, seconded by Anna. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Let's take a 10-minute break and then come back and do the business. Thank you.